Radio Prague News.
Alphonse Mucha's Slav Epic has gone on display in Japan. The central bank made a record intervention on the currency markets in January, and the Social Democrats have lost one-tenth of their members in 2 years. Alphonse Mucha's cycle of paintings, the Slav Epic, has gone on display in the Japanese capital, Tokyo. The exhibition is part of a year of Czech culture in Japan, organised in connection with the 60th anniversary of the renewal of diplomatic relations between the two states. The Slav Epic exhibition, which is expected to attract up to 250,000 visitors in 3 months, was opened by the Czech Minister of Culture, Daniel Herman. There has been some opposition to the sending of the paintings to Japan, with restorers warning that the canvases could be damaged. The Czech National Bank made its biggest ever intervention on the currency markets in 1 month in January, according to figures it released on Tuesday. The central bank spent 391 billion crowns buying euros in January in a bid to keep the crown down, Czech crown down to around 27 to the common European currency. The policy of keeping the crown weak was launched in late 2013. Czech National Bank officials say it will be discontinued this year, but analysts say anticipation of the change has made the crown more subject to currency speculation. The divisive intervention policy has cost the Czech National Bank 1.3 billion crowns to date. Coalition leaders, the Social Democrats, lost around a tenth of their members in the last 2 years, according to a report prepared for next weekend's party congress, quoted by the Czech news agency. At the end of December, the Social Democrats had just under 20,500 members. That's around 2,200 fewer than at the end of 2014. In the same period, 57 local branches were shut down. A woman who brutally stabbed a stranger to death at a Prague shopping centre last year has received a 30-year prison term. Michelle Sudku was also ordered by the Prague Municipal Court to pay compensation of 850,000 crowns to the family of her victim. Sudku's plea that she was insane at the time of the killing, which took place at the capital's Nový Smíchov shopping complex, was rejected. She was also found guilty of attempting to strangle a girl at a cafe. Czech scouts have begun mapping the fates of scouts who died during World War II in battle, in concentration camps or in prisons, Czech TV reported on Tuesday. Within the project War Heroes, they are attempting to trace their fallen predecessors' life stories in a bid to preserve them for future generations of Czech scouts. The Nazis banned the scouts in 1940 and many of its members joined the resistance. Around 700 members of the scouts died in the course of the war. The first Czech film festival in Malaysia is set to take place from March 9th to 12th. Organised by the Czech embassy in the capital Kuala Lumpur, it will feature 5 Czech movies, including the Oscar-winning Kolya, The Elementary School and Dark Blue World. The weather Wednesday should see rain and some bright spells. Temperatures are expected to reach up to around 8 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's programme, the Czech Republic adds its voice to leaders supporting a multi-speed Europe. A new survey highlights the reason many training to be teachers move on to other fields. Later on in the programme, we look at a new guide that highlights Prague's best eco-friendly spots. All that coming up, so please stay with us. During an informal summit in Versailles on Monday, the leaders of France, Germany, Italy and Spain expressed support for a multi-speed Europe, which would allow some EU member states to press ahead with integration faster than others. Those in the slow lane would restrict themselves to participation in the single market and cooperation on foreign and security policy. Daniela Lazarová spoke to Vid Beneš from the Institute for International Relations about what a two-tier Europe would mean.
Creating a multi-speed Europe is a dangerous thing which would put the EU basically on the path towards disintegration. I quite understand the arguments raised in our region, in Central and Eastern Europe, that having a multi-speed Europe creates some kind of second-class membership for those countries who do not participate in closer cooperation within the core. On the other side, we need to take into account that to some extent multi-speed Europe is already a reality. And this is a result of not only the will of the core of the Eurozone to integrate further, but it's also a result of the inability of those who or lack of willingness of those who remain outside of Euro to join the Eurozone.
What are the main dangers?
It would definitely create a bad atmosphere. It would the EU would lose a sense of solidarity. If you have a core with different sets of rules, obligations and rights, the EU would gradually lose the spirit of solidarity.
If a two-tier Europe were implemented, where would this leave the Czech Republic? In the slow lane, presumably.
In the slow lane. And what is also important, we would lose the ability to build coalitions. And we would actually be locked permanently in the Visegrad group with partners we are not always happy with, like Hungary and Poland. Because if you have a single-speed Europe, it means that everybody participates in all policies, which enables you to build coalitions with other countries. If only a certain set of countries participate in policies like monetary union, then the coalitions naturally are being built along these dividing lines. So it would definitely limit our room for maneuver.
What should be the Czech reaction to this development?
Yeah, the Czech Republic already reacted and defended the notion of unity of the EU. So the Czech Republic should oppose the attempts to introduce a multi-speed Europe. On the other side, the Czech Republic also should propose a creative solution to European problems, including defending the idea of European federation, including defending the idea of the democratization on the European level. We are scared of the so-called F word, but if approached sensibly and creatively, I think there is a room for the Czech Republic to maneuver and to propose interesting idea.
Vít Beneš from the Institute for International Relations talking there to my colleague Daniela Lazarová. A new poll conducted by SCNC for Charles University's Faculty of Education suggests that only 40% of students training to be teachers take up the profession after graduation. The number one reason? Frankly, miserable wages. The findings are not really a surprise, but serve as a renewed warning that changes are needed. Jan Wellinger has the details.
There are plenty of university students who want a career in teaching and have every intention of pursuing one. The sad reality is that many don't follow through after they graduate. A new poll by SCNC suggests that a large number of them come to the conclusion it is simply not feasible to work as a teacher when starting salaries are around 20,000 crowns a month or less. That 20,000 is the equivalent of around 740 euros. The situation is not new. Low wages have plagued the education sector for years. But the issue was recently thrown into sharper relief. The news that a large supermarket chain in the Czech Republic was now paying cashiers higher starting salaries of 23,000 no doubt left many in the education sector shaking their heads. Given the expertise teachers have to attain and the responsibilities they have to meet on a daily basis, it's hard to understand why they should be paid so little by comparison. Bob Cartos of the NGO EduIn suggests a lot of the blame for low salaries in education today lies with past governments. Education, in short, has been often put on the back burner.
It's not easy to explain because this is a long-lasting problem. If you read the political programs of political parties in Czech Republic, the education is a priority there. But when it comes to the practical politics and practical policy, you can find that it's not treated in the same way. One firm, solid fact is that according to the stats of OECD, the Czech Republic can country which invests into the education under the average of the next countries in OECD. The problem is education is priority only on the paper, but not in the practical politics.
The current education minister, Katarzyna Valachová, is aware of the situation, according to ihned.cz. Certainly, she delivered on the promise of a recent wage increase of 8%. Not surprisingly, critics charged it was too little too late, a band-aid when a transfusion was needed. Still, perhaps further increases are in the cards. According to ihned.cz, there are plans under which teachers could earn up to 43,000 crowns monthly, this by the year 2020. The hope is to draw back or to retain talented teachers who until now have had to scrape by to make a living. An additional aim is also for up to 70% of students studying to be teachers to continue on after they graduate, which would be a 30% improvement. Some are skeptical that such a transformation will be possible in a relatively short period of time, not least because this autumn voters are going to go to the polls. Who knows how the next government will approach the problem? At the same time, it should also be fairly obvious to whoever takes up the mantle next that marked improvements are a necessity. Already, the impact is being felt, with the findings suggesting that there could be a considerable lack of qualified teachers, including language specialists, within 3 years. EduIn's Bob Carto says at the very least the government needs to think about the message being sent.
I call it a shame of Czech society, as a shame of Czech politics, because if you treat the teachers worse than the cashiers in the supermarket, that's the message. That's the message, because the role of teachers in society is one of the most important. And if the society is not really able to ensure them the decent income, it is something I think that undermine their role and the role of the schools in society. That's the wrong way we are going nowadays.
Bob Kartos of EduIn ending that report by Jan Wellinger. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Eco-friendly hotels, bike rentals, vegan and raw restaurants or local design boutiques. All that and much more can be found in a new guide to Prague called The Green City Guide. Written by two young eco-conscious women, the guide offers sustainable alternatives to travellers visiting the Czech capital. When I met with the authors of Prague Green City Guide, Aneta Hebrová and Jennifer Day, I first asked them to introduce it in more detail.
Well, as you can see immediately, it's a book about green Prague. So alternatives for people who are eco-conscious, looking for sustainable alternatives. That includes vegetarian restaurants, eco-hostels and hotels, sustainable fashion shops, places where you can buy unpackaged food and products for the zero-waste crowd, places where you can rent bikes, even bike-sharing options, urban gardens, farmers markets, where you can buy local products. So we try to really cover all bases. So really from the morning to the evening, where you can sleep, where you can eat, explore, shop, and then also get involved, because we want people to know about local projects that are happening. So NGOs that are raising awareness and organizing, for example, film festivals where even tourists can attend and watch documentaries in English about these kinds of topics.
Talking about tourists, who is this guide intended for? Is it just for tourists, or did you also have on mind local people who might find it useful?
Well, for sure, the main target group is like the tourist group, but it can also serve expats living here and also this community as well. So for everyone who is just interested in this topic and who loves Prague.
How long did it actually take you to put all this information together? Because there are really dozens of different businesses. How long have you been working on this?
Mm-hmm. We have about 167 businesses listed, or not only businesses, but places. Well, our project started 2 years ago, Green Glasses, and that was more of a platform for locals, but we were researching the same topic, trying to find businesses that offer sustainable alternatives.
And this is an online project, the project Green Glasses,
yes,
that you're talking about.
Yes, it's an online project, and it's a similar idea. So a lot of what we learned through those 2 years of doing in-depth interviews with a lot of businesses and people, a lot of that went into the book. So although writing the book took a summer, like a few months, the research really took place over 2 years.
Where did you find all the information? Did the locals help you? Did you draw on their feedback?
Definitely we did. It was kind of going with the flow, I would say. I mean, we would meet a business and then they would give us tips about other businesses that they know. We would speak with our friends through various events that we attended. We also got tips from friends or other people involved in this topic. So it kind of grew really organically. I mean, it was never a problem. We always had too many businesses, not too few. We had a big list, and every week we would try to interview a few of them to really fill in our database online.
And how did you actually decide which of these places will go into the Green City Guide?
Well, some of them were like obvious, but we started to actually through some categories like food or cosmetics, and then through people we realized that it covers more topics with transport and so on. That obvious ones were definitely secondhand shops, renting, sharing, anything which doesn't involve like just buying new things. And from other perspective, we looked on organic food, fair trade options, anything which is something more.
More positive than negative impacts. Yeah. I mean, nothing has a zero impact, of course, but we know that organic farming uses less water and less pesticides than conventional farming. So we support any organically grown food, also organic fashion. Eating vegetarian, I think by now, is known to be one of the main things that you can do, really one of the easiest things to really cut your environmental impact. So for us, it was sort of like an obvious choice to list vegan and vegetarian restaurants. We believe in taking small steps. So people who are not yet full vegetarians, we think it's fine to just start by reducing. So we would try not to be too much of extremists, but things like biking and secondhand shops, like you said, are fairly obvious ways to reduce your impact.
How did you actually get the idea to start this green directory and then to continue with producing this green guide of Prague?
Well, it was a personal challenge. Jenny was traveling a lot and she saw how, like, let's say nature was damaged, a lot of plastic everywhere. And my motivation was health because I wanted to be more healthy. So we started with ourselves and we also realized that the environment and everything, it's not like disconnected from us.
And a big thing, I think, is feeling powerless. And that's kind of how we felt, I think, a few years ago. You know, when you're having problems with your health or you see the news and all the terrible things that are happening with the environment and society, and you feel like you can't do anything or the change is happening too slowly. And so that's why we really wanted to just start here, start locally, doing what we can. And sharing that with other people, because it takes a lot of time to research these things. Most people don't have the time on the side of their job to figure out everything, like where to find these kinds of alternatives. So we felt that that was kind of some added value.
How expensive would you say is to lead a zero waste or sustainable life? Is it really for everyone? What would you say to people who argue that it's just too time consuming and expensive to lead this way of life?
I definitely think it can be cheaper. If you kind of embrace the quality over quantity mindset, then it doesn't have to be more expensive, because it's not just about buying a product which says green on it. You know, it's also about reducing consumption. Even eating vegetarian saves a lot of money in the long run. Although organic food can cost more, I think it balances out because you're spending less in some categories and then you can afford to kind of invest in things that matter, like your health. There are a lot of other things that can save you money. For example, if you feel like you need something, you know, you need a drill to install something in your house, you can consider whether maybe borrowing it could be an option, sharing with friends. And then you find that through this kind of sharing mentality, you aren't spending more money. And there's the added benefit that you're building community and sort of like getting to know your neighbors, which I think is quite nice. And of course, you know, there's also the issue of saving water and energy at home, which is an obvious way to reduce your costs. But it's definitely a stereotype about this lifestyle. And some of the shops are on the expensive end. But again, you don't go there and buy, you know, 10 things. You buy something really high quality that you'll then take care of and keep for a long time. So that's what I would answer to that.
As you said, you've traveled all around the world. So how green is Prague in comparison to other European cities?
I think it's growing. I mean, we both see that it's definitely the interest in the topic is growing. When I go to other cities, like Vienna, for example, I see that it's a bigger topic. Almost every shop you go in has some reference to sustainability. Even in the regular grocery shop, you can find a lot of organic products. And here it's maybe still kind of an alternative lifestyle. But I think it's changing. I mean, even since I've moved to Prague, you know, there are more and more farmers markets. You can find these small bio shops, and people are more aware of the topic. So I think it can definitely change quickly, and it's definitely improving all the time.
Your guide, your Prague Green Guide, which has just been released, is not the only thing you have been working on in recent years. As you have already mentioned, you have organized several festivals. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So our festival is called Sustainability Day. The first one took place in June last year, and we wanted to bring the community together in person just to meet the people. And we felt like although the online platform is really a great resource, you know, you still want this human element. And people understand the lifestyle best when they see it and when they can touch it. And we wanted the festival to be kind of a place where you can go and see every category of life, what your alternatives are, presented in a nice way, in a good environment with music and food. We even had some documentary screenings, some talks. So it was kind of a positive event. We didn't want to have kind of too many negative, depressing messages. It was more like there are things you can do, and in fact, they're fun, and this lifestyle brings you a lot of advantages. And we had another one in December for Christmas, because we know Christmas is a time of hyper-consumerism, and we wanted to give people the option to find gifts that are more sustainable. So that was really fun, and we had around 3,000 people attend, actually, in December and 2,000 in June. So that's kind of evidence, I think, that people are interested in the topic, which is great.
And what are your plans into the future?
Well, for this year, it's definitely about our Prague Green City Guide. We would like to also sell it abroad, so it will be the main focus. And otherwise, just anything which is aligned with our mission, like to make our life better and make Prague greener and to promote this sustainable lifestyle.
Aneta Hebrová and earlier Jennifer Day were our guests in that program. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. Just a reminder that all our programs are available online at radio.cz. And you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and on Twitter. If you have any comments or questions for us, you can easily get in touch. Contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Radio Prague, Vinohradská 120-99, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franíková, and all of us here at Radio Prague. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.